have you with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. You know, parents don't expect or even want their children to live with them forever. But when they do move out, the transition can be emotionally challenging. And we're going to talk about that for this last half hour with our guest, Ann Totaro. She's a behavioral health therapist at UW Health. She works with adults, couples, and families. She's an approved supervisor for the American Association for Marriage and Family Therapy. And it's great to have her here. So did you or someone you know send a child off to college this month? Just this morning, my daughter left for Topeka, Kansas for a new job, a new full-time job. She was working there previously, but it was hard to see her go. That's sort of that empty nest syndrome working on me a little bit today. What about you? What sort of emotions are you working through? Or maybe, as a friend told me, how I respond to the empty nest syndrome is yay. Oh, boy. Whatever the case, I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk at WPR.org. That's talk at WPR.org. Ann Totaro, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Larry. Crew and listeners, hello.
What are the most common symptoms of someone experiencing empty nest syndrome? Or maybe I should first start by, how is it exhibited most often?
That's a great question, Larry, and it's a great place to start because it has a broad range, like you already mentioned. There could be joy. But the point is that when you see kind of the syndrome part of it, right, if it's something long term, you're seeing a lot of sadness, a lot of grief, yeah, a lot of emotional difficulty. And you mentioned a great part in the beginning, Larry, even with your lived experience, to say it's not always people just being 18 and leaving for college, right? That's one lens. But there's people that leave for work. They leave for independent living. And I just let people know, even if it's not a formal medical diagnosis, it's a well-utilized term to talk about that this affects people. And here's the thing, relationships are important to us. They should. They should affect us.
Absolutely. Well, common symptoms, get a little down in the dumps. Sometimes it lasts a long time for some people. Sometimes they get over it pretty quickly, I guess. Do mothers and fathers experience it the same way, you think?
That's a really good question. The gender question doesn't matter on, you know, sides of the coin. I have seen what matters more is mostly how many kids they have, right? How many times they've been through it. And also, I think where they just are in their life, are they in that? Some people are really young parents, right? Some people aren't. Some people are older. They're in their 70s when somebody leaves. So sometimes that matters. I've noticed it's across the spectrum for genders because things, but whether you're a dad or a mom or even an aunt or uncle that's taking care of somebody, I think that people have that grief and loss, that feeling of loneliness, and to be honest, dissonance. There's a lot of, which is just a fancy term for confusion. Like, I'm very happy they're gone. Why am I feeling this way? Why am I still so worried? So I've found more about where people are with how many kids or where they are in their life, even if it's pre-retirement or maybe they're retired. Their responses are different, more so than gender, I've found.
Sort of like, you hear about these various stages of grief that people go through when they lose a loved one. Do parents kind of, is that what parents are going through in a way?
You are 100% on. People think of grief and loss as someone that's physically not with us, like they passed on. And I think that I tend to, as a grief specialist, I will share with people that it is just a transition. It could be retirement. It could be launching for your 18 to 30-year-olds. But it is just a time of loss. Now, empty nest syndrome itself is very interesting because it has its own stages, in fact. It has that initial anticipation and that anxiety stage. And that could be eagerness and excitedness. But this often happens right before people leave. And here's the interesting part, even seconds before people leave. And then there's kind of the grief phase, that initial loss, the transition period. And for some people, that could last a second and then they're redecorating their room. or it could be, you know, like prolonged bereavement, that it actually really impacts people. And then there's the adjustment phase. This is the where you are allowing your skin, your bones, your nervous system, your routine, your home to actually settle into this new way of life. And then the final thing, here's the hope. Here's the coolest thing about human beings. Why I love being a therapist after two decades is the growth phase. We reinvent ourselves. Welcome to the beauty of a human being. We evolve, we adjust. Our biology, you guys, here's the coolest thing, is built to do this. It's built to heal. It's just about sometimes whether we can do that solo or we do it with the help of somebody else. That's okay. But there are stages that people go through. Absolutely.
Well, I would think for some people, I know for sure that regret can come into play with parents. They didn't do a good enough job, or they worry, you know, what's going to happen? I could have been a better parent.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Grief, shame. Here's another thing. Perfectionism. I should do things perfectly. They need to do this, so this happens. Self-identity plays a role into it. Yet here's the thing is, all of this, should I do a good job? The coolest thing, everybody, about having a relationship with your adult kids, you get to talk to them. I always say, aging is a privilege, right? So ultimately, if you have the privilege and the opportunity to talk to your child still, if you're like, man, I shouldn't have done that. I should have apologized. Apologize for it. Can I tell you something about adult children? There is not an apology when I say that's quote unquote too late. Right? If they're like, I'm just glad my parents took accountability. They're growing up alongside you. So whether it's apologizing, but talk to them, because if there's anything I learned as a relational expert, repair is powerful. It is a powerful thing.
How, while you're talking about communicating, how often is a healthy amount of communicating with a child that's just left the home?
Well, that's a good question. The question of, I have parents that I see one-to-one and they'll be like, should I call them? Should I call them? I said, if they haven't called you about getting a stain out of their shirt yet, you probably should call them, right? But here's a great thing. There's the question of when do we start it, right? I say that ask them before they leave the home. What do they want to do? You want a weekly call? You want a monthly call? You want a daily call? It doesn't matter. But what's good for you? Text, phone call, video, you can start to negotiate that adult relationship. But I always say it is different for each family. I just think diversity-wise, it's different. I think how people prepare is different. And here's the third one. There are circumstances way beyond our control that affect stress and things that happen. So you may plan for monthly check-ins, but stuff happens and then boom, you're on daily phone calls. So there's really no science or evidence base to say how much, except talk to them and see what you two want to do, or you three, or you five, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's a hard one to, and I was wondering about the differences between the sexes on this, moms versus dads, and communicating, because I'm thinking about my own experiences now with the daughter going through college and so forth. Well, I would do probably a once a week, and more likely I might check in with a text or something. Mm-hmm. Whereas mom, on the other hand, it would be like a three or four or five times a week.
Yeah, a little more frequently. I definitely called my mom for certain things than others. She was in the medical field. So if it was something like I needed to fix my car, my dad was getting a call, which happened less frequently. But if it was, I got to get the stain on my shirt, I got to do this, I was calling my mom, you know? But I joke with people, just no random drop-ins, no matter what gender, no matter mom or dad, no random drop-ins. Most of us in adulthood don't like them. You got to give us some planning. But I think that there are some differences. There are still some things we see. You know, moms, women, there is still some sort of gender trajectory that they are more social creatures in the sense of that's how they connect. They think communication is the way to connect, where you think of acts of service or things like that are more so for dads or men. That is still true with a love language, regardless of anything. There are things that are changing and evolving. So I think that moms will be like, I have a sense I'm going to call them and ask how they're doing. And the dad may be like, I need to remind them it's daylight savings at November, right? Like, and both of them show love, both of them help. And how frequent you show love is not as important as if you show love.
Our guest today, Ann Totaro, is a behavioral health therapist at UW Health. It's great to have her with us today as we talk empty nest syndrome. I'm wondering how you've, as you listen in, what your experience has been like and how you dealt with it. And I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send us an email to talk@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at empty nest syndrome and dealing with it today with our guest, Ann Totaro, who is a behavioral health therapist at UW Health. She works with young adults, couples, families, experiencing all different kinds of emotions from the sound of it, but she's pretty upbeat and positive, so she'd be, I think, would be somebody fun to work with, as a matter of fact. Questions, though. Have you had that sort of issue of being anxious or worried about your child leaving the nest? Give a call at 800-642-1234, email to talk@WPR.org. Do you have people, do you deal with people who have this issue, Ann?
Yes, 110%. So it is, one of my specialties is 18 to 30 year olds. And I say people in transition. So I treat people that are in retirement, that are having, that are baby boomers, that have high anxiety about this next stage of identity. I treat families and couples and individuals as they come into these stages of launching, is what we call it. So this is actually my specialty area. It's one of my favorite things to do on both sides of the age spectrum. I think it's been, after really 2 decades, I joke with people, I've never not liked going to work. That's for sure.
So let's talk about coping strategies. Are there, what do you recommend, let's say, in the first few days, the weeks or months after a child leaves the home?
So this is interesting, Larry, because I say the skills have to come way before that day. They
All
have
right.
to come.
You got to prepare.
You got to prepare my voice, if everybody can hear it in their heads, whether I'm in a headset or not, or in their cars. You want to prepare early. You want to extend your relationships. When I say your children are important and they're not the only important relationship for us, whether you're in a coupleship, whether you have other family members or workplace, school, friends, you want to get hobbies. I know that sounds really basic. People say, I don't even know what a hobby is because I've been parenting for 18 plus years. Hang out with your friends, you know, find purpose and belonging. They're the greatest protective factors. But even before that happens, these are things you can do to kind of start, skills you can start before they're leaving. Now, let's say they immediately leave. Have your people. Prepare that grief will happen. We don't know how it will. It's why, if there's anything I learned with tragedy and grief, it's unpredictable. You don't know how it will show up, but plan for it. Plan for something fun to look forward to. Plan for something that forward thinking can really help you. And have your people that not just know the person, maybe it's your partner or friend, or there's, you know, and I don't want to say sibling. We don't want to lean on them emotionally, but ultimately your own siblings, right? But talk about that. Other parents that have had kids launch, you find your people. Again, social animals. Talking to people that understand can be very, very helpful.
I was thinking, as you were talking there, I was thinking, you know, all right, empty nest. But what, let's say we've got 2 children or 3 children, and the first one leaves. And it's not only you feeling bad, but maybe it's the brother or sister. And
yep.
I think it's probably, as a parent, what are you, you know, what should you be your job in that case?
That's a great, that's a really great question. As a family therapist, I really appreciate that, Larry, because I think sometimes we do forget about the siblings when it comes to grief. But I know that parents aren't, you know, they're the first persons to come in and say, I'll be okay, but I'm really worried about that younger sibling, because they were a huge support for them. A big thing is keep that sibling connection going, because here's an honest thing that I want to say. It is a tough thing, but I tell my patients this and my clients, we're preparing them for you not to be here, right? We are preparing for them that one day that you will pass on as a parent, and you want to make sure that you're building those relationships. And a huge thing that you can do, connect the siblings to each other and build and repair those relationships. Obviously, it has to be on them, but ultimately say, why don't we give them a call? Why don't we go visit them in October when it's family night? Why don't we go do those things? And sometimes very openly, sometimes if it really affects kids and they get really depressed, because they do, they're very connected to their siblings. This is where sometimes formal help can help, where whether it's a therapist, I sound biased, whether it's finding a therapist, but there are a lot of great therapists around Wisconsin that treat teens and kids and are prepared, well-equipped to help with this.
Yeah. Colleen had sent an email to say their youngest child had difficulty being the only child at home when the others were in college.
Yes.
That's got to be maybe the biggest change was with the only child after all the other kids are gone.
It's quiet. I could tell you because I was the youngest child of three. I was for sure this was me. Both of my siblings successfully launched at 18. They were gone. My brother was 9 years older. My sister is 3 to 4 years older than me. So I had about 4 years with my parents, and there can be a joy to that. You know, it's tough. There was a loneliness and a quietness to the space, but I can say, I actually think I got a benefit of connecting to my mom and dad with late night conversations and in ways that maybe my siblings didn't, because they were, had three kids, but I had really deep, wholesome conversations with my parents that maybe I wouldn't have had. I got to build that deep relationship with them, and while also going to visit and being connected to them. But I want to be clear and validate Colleen and that youngest experience. It is. It's horribly sad. There's a lot of grief. And to be honest, your life changes when your siblings aren't there.
Are there symptoms? What symptoms might mean a parent's heading toward some clinical depression or maybe anxieties, these disorders, if you're one half of that noticing it and the other half of the relationship?
That's a really good question, too. Anxiety and well-being and depression. So there's something, and I will always share with people, this is educational only. If you're ever curious, because it's not formal medical advice, never be afraid to call and go see a therapist and check in. That's always my first thing. But the to answer your question, Larry, is if you noticing it's prolonged, and I can't give you a timeline, but if you notice that other people are showing concern, or even there's a your identity in the sense has changed a little bit. You were an extrovert, you're now an introvert. Maybe you're isolating a little bit. It's affecting your daily living. Maybe you're not wanting to get up and go to work, right? Maybe it could be something small like that. You are probably a caretaker. So another part to that is a parent and a caretaker, being able to say to yourself, do I not want to caretake? Am I avoiding calling? Am I not wanting to engage? If there's those big changes in your identity or who you are, you're sleeping more or less, you're eating more or less, if there are things that don't seem like you, that's a time to call and reach out and get some help.
Dot in Manitowoc has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Dot.
Hi. Good afternoon. I heard an old saying many years ago that says, healthy birds fly away. Keep that in mind when your children have left the home.
Dot.
Well said, Dot.
I think, yeah, healthy birds fly away. I think that's right. That's pretty cool. Henry emailed wondering, is empty nest syndrome unique to American culture, or does it happen around the world?
Wonderful question. Thank you for bringing up diversity and the world. It is different. Remind me of his name really quick. My working memory failed.
Henry.
Henry. Hi, Henry. I will say that it is different because let's use an example. With Asian cultures specifically, and not all of them, but a lot of them, you notice that the females in the oldest of the generation, sometimes they do stay home. Sometimes they do until they're married into a new family. Sometimes they're expected to come home and take care of the parents. It is different across generations and across the world. The hardest part about this is there's less evidence based about teens and young adults. That's one thing I'm really passionate about. There's not as much research as there should be. But, you know, in America, there's very much this individualistic society of like, you better get out at 18 or else you're not successful, which is just different, right? But that's where, especially in my work with people, I have to say, culturally, what did you grow up with? What was your expectation? A lot of the times when I work with parents and the kids is grieving expectations of what was to be like if a kid comes back home, right? Like, well, what did you expect? Well, if they were launched, they were gone forever and it was going to be okay. So this is, and for some, they're saying, no, I don't want my kid to leave. They need to stay and take care of me as I age or when these things happen. And that is a huge cultural difference.
Barb in Appleton, thank you for calling. Barb, are you there? I think she's there, but I think she left her phone out. She took her. She's not. She's no longer with us, Barb. I'm sorry.
No, I'm here. I'm here.
Hi, Barb.
I'm here.
Okay.
She's no longer with us.
No, I am.
Well. Barb, you didn't turn your radio down, which I'm very sure Joel told you to do. And that is what is causing all this confusion. So I'm sorry we're not going to be able to take your call here because we're not going to get this all straightened out. Oh, man. How do you approach treating a couple where empty nest syndrome has caused a marital strain?
Oh, that I, again, as a relational expert, thank you, Larry. Whoever created these questions or thought about these, great job, because this is a huge thing. Some people celebrate. When I share with you that some people, after a minute, they're redecorating the house and they're making that kid's room a guest bedroom. They're planning their first trip. It is truly a joy. They're like, finally, silence in the house and we get to connect. And then there's others. We actually do see gray divorces is what we call them, is after kids are gone. We see that they had not worked on that relationship beforehand. And you can tell, I always say, kids can tell if parents don't like each other. I'm not talking about love. If they don't like each other, kids know, right? They know. So sometimes very openly, people do stay together financially or emotionally for kids. And when that happens, we do see separations, divorces, even straight after within a year. And then the kids that are launching now have to grieve leaving home and the relationship of their parents. It's definitely a thing.
And I think it resolves itself in most cases or not. This whole business of empty nest syndrome.
In most all cases, yes, it does. Time is a wonderful healer, and grief is just something we have to go through, and it's something that happens, and it takes time. It does. And if it doesn't, that's when you reach out to somebody like me or a coach or a friend that knows a lot about it. I wish there were more support groups for this specific thing and kids launching. The best thing to do is grief groups. You know, if there are grief groups that are specific to stage of life, that's really important. But I would say in most cases, yes, Larry.
So grief groups in terms of, I mean, how would you find, I mean, what would be the title and how would you find it?
That's a great question. So a lot of the times they're for loss when people have passed. In this case, there's not like an empty nest syndrome grief group, but there are like parenting support groups. There are support groups for adult children. Those are great examples. So grief group for adult children is a great one. And sometimes you might have topics like substance use, leaving the home, things like that, but you're going to work with people that are going through hard emotions about a transition with their child.
And then if you wait a few years, here come the grandkids, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Don't wait too long. You blink and it's happening. There you are. Then you're a secondary parent all over again, mom and dad. You can't escape us. And we might come back home. You never know. There's things that happen. Careful with those vacations.
Yeah, there was a lot of coming back home here back in, what was it, 2022 mm-hmm. or there with COVID. That was
absolutely.
Did you go through a lot of work with folks at that time? Probably not.
Actually.
Did you do it in person often?
No, it was where I work, UW-Madison and UW-Health was really great at getting us back in person. But yes, that was a big time because a lot of people had to come home financially. They lost their jobs. They had things that come up. And I did have a lot of family sessions with that transition to say, we're building this new life and now we need to adjust back. But again, human beings are very resilient. And a lot of them, if not all, did an incredible job at bouncing back from that.
Anne, a pleasure talking with you today about empty nest syndrome. I went through a little of it this morning. I'm fine now with my daughter leaving, but I'm glad that we had a chance to talk. So thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry and listeners, and I hope you have a beautiful Monday.
Anne Totira is a behavioral health therapist at UW Health, and it was really fun and interesting talking with her about empty nest syndrome. There's probably other things we could talk with her about down the road as well, and maybe we can do that with her. A big thanks to our whole team, Clara Nyper, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins, and of course our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller, and I hope you stay with us. There's lots more in store right through the day here on WPR News.